Hey, Leslie, good to see you here. Hey, we're going to get started just in 1 minute. I'm going to give some folks an opportunity to join us. In the meantime, if you got any questions, hey, Robin, good to see you. Want to let you know if you got any questions, you can type them in any time in the chat area. Just go in and in the chat and send it to me, and yeah, I'll address those and I can bring you into the call. If you're somewhere where you don't want me to unmute you, let's say there's a lot of background noise or whatever, just let me know also when you type in your question in the chat area. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. And I had a couple of questions that had come up, and I'm not sure if one of these was in the Academy forum or not. I think it was, and the other one was one of my other coaching groups. So I'd like to go ahead and get started with these two because these are things that kind of come up frequently. So I figured this would be a great way to break the ice while you guys think of some questions, and of course others can join us as well. All right, this first one is okay. Yeah, this is basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, okay? But this is a client who said they were going to move forward with a project. So they had already, this is Chris who submitted this, and he'd already done one project for them. They were very happy, and they told him, he didn't ask, he told him, look, we want to do another ebook with you. And this is before the Thanksgiving holiday. He said, great, yeah, just let me know. And yeah, I'll get back with you after the holidays. He just followed up last week, and he hasn't heard back. And he was wondering, hey, how much should I push this? And so I have this philosophy that, look, when a client or a prospect, let's just say they've identified something they're going to do, and it's going to more than likely involve you, there's not a lot you can do to create urgency in a legitimate way. So in other words, you can't like keep like the just continuing follow up every week. It's only going to take you so far, and it starts getting diminishing returns very, very quickly. In fact, it starts working against you. So I love follow up, but I think with follow up, you have to be smart. I love smart follow up. So what I suggested is, look, there are a couple of ways for prospects and clients who have indicated they're going to do more with you, they're going to do something with you, the couple of ways that you can stay top of mind. The first thing is just understanding that prospects and clients, they have a lot going on. This project that they may have mentioned is not the only thing on their plate. They're usually being pulled in all kinds of different directions or reacting to just fires and urgent things. So it's not that, we automatically assume as creative people that, oh my gosh, they change their mind, they hate us now. And that's rarely the case. So you need to understand that they're not really thinking about you every single day. And that's okay. It's not that they don't like you, it's just the reality of the day. So really, a lot of it is about urgency that's created internally in the organization. There's not much you can do to create the urgency. So there are a couple of things that I would do. One is to put them in your nurturing bucket. So treat them as someone that is like a not yet ready prospect, even if they're a client. I definitely have clients in my nurturing bucket, and you just basically staying in touch with value-added information. Okay, so put them in your nurturing sequence, number one. Number two, take advantage of upcoming events. Excuse me. So one of these ideas is the Lake Tahoe email. So you're going on a trip, you're going to be out of town, you're going to be out of pocket, something's coming up. Or in the case of right now, because this is our December Platinum call, we got the holidays coming up, right? So there's going to be a break, and you're going to be out of pocket, and maybe you're already starting to talk to some clients about work in January. So this is a wonderful opportunity to say, hey, I know you had mentioned, and if you just followed up last week, as in Chris's case, I would wait until next week. So now it's mid-December, so we're getting a little closer to the holidays. I just wanted to And I would respond to the thread that you already have going with them, an email, and let them know that you're going to be taken off for about 10 days during the holidays. So you're going to be out of pocket, and you're already scheduling through, you know, the end of January for client work. So you just wanted to check in and see if this is something they still want to work on, and to see if we could go ahead and put them on the schedule, because you want to make sure you get them in. You'd hate, you know, to get booked and then have them come back, hey, we're ready, okay? That tends to be very, very effective. If you can say it honestly, of course, I wouldn't lie. If you have zero work for January, then come up with something different. I would then highlight the holidays. But if you're already starting to schedule some stuff into January, or you are talking with some clients about that, then it's a great way to not necessarily create urgency, but kind of bring it a little bit closer to the surface and build a little bit of urgency, or at least a little bit of attention in a legitimate way. So that's always look to see what can I leverage, what upcoming event, whether it's my own or, you know, some kind of holiday or summer's coming up or something that you can use to your advantage. The other question that has come up is related to productized services. So there's an excellent execution plan inside the Academy on productized services. And this is really kind of catching on, this whole concept. And I have a lot of people who are asking me about, you know, when does it make the most sense? What should I productize? And so there's still some confusion around that. I see some people that are trying to productize some stuff when maybe it doesn't make sense to productize. I don't think it makes sense to productize your services for the sake of productizing. But let me just take a step back and just define productized services. A productized service is when you take something, it's typically a made-to-order product or a made-to-order service, I should say, that you give it some legs. So you define a very specific scope of work instead of kind of leaving it open. And then you're able to, because of the extra specific scope of work, you're able to now put a specific price on it. Now, you may have several versions, several flavors of it with different price points. That's fine. But think in terms of, like, you know, a case study, for instance. They could vary, of course. But let's just say you take a stand and you say, look, I have this package and it's a two-page case study. It includes interviews. It includes, you know, creating a press release for it. It includes design, and, you know, then some other parameters or inclusions. You might also talk about what it doesn't include, and then you say it's, you know, $1,700, whatever. So that's a productized service. The biggest question you need to ask yourself before you go down that path is, when does it make sense and for whom? The pattern is basically this. Smaller companies, smaller businesses and organizations are going to be much more comfortable with that type of structure with a productized service. Less sophisticated clients are often better candidates for that. Organizations that are not used to, or teams that are not used to putting things together on their own. So that kind of points to smaller clients, less sophisticated clients. So in other words, like you giving them something and then the deliverable is a Microsoft Word document, like they don't even, not sure what to do with that, okay? Or maybe they're not as confident with that. So they're not buying the pieces and project managing themselves. They kind of rely on you to provide more of a turnkey service. So that would really lend itself to a productized service. Organizations, or you're going after clients, they're not really sure what they need to execute a strategy. They know they need more leads, or they know they need better content or more consistent content. Then, yeah, it's another, that lends itself to productized services. So what am I talking about here? Well, all kinds of different clients. But if you work or go after smaller organizations, smaller businesses, entrepreneurs, of course, consumers, consultants, solopreneurs, those all really lend themselves to productized services. Big corporations, not as much. I mean, you can, and there's certainly some opportunities there, but it's not going to be kind of an across-the-board opportunity. The other opportunity, and this is really, then can apply more to even the corporate market, is when you find one or two services in your toolbox that you can, you feel you can standardize or you can bundle very effectively. So I mentioned one example earlier, case studies. I found after doing a ton of them, you know, these are all pretty much not the same, but very, very similar. And it might make sense to create this kind of standardized scope of work. Maybe I have some different options there or several flavors of that. But, you know, I feel confident that if I price it a certain way, I don't have to quote each one individually, kind of as a made-to-order service. I can just kind of quote this package or this bundle. White paper plans, another great opportunity. Newsletter services. So the newsletter, here's a great example of something that could apply to many different clients. And most clients, even the sophisticated ones, are going to want a little bit more than just the main article, right? So now you have an opportunity to provide more and to package things a little better. Blogging, not just the blogging itself, but the strategy, the planning, including the editorial calendar, and of course the writing. That lends itself to productizing in terms of creating packages and different options where you bundle things together that go well together. And of course, that's an example of something that might work better for a smaller type client as opposed to IBM as an example. So anyway, just two things that have come up recently. Again, the how do I create urgency? Are there any ways to create urgency in the whole productized service thing? You know, keeping in mind that this is really not, the end goal is not creating productized services. The end goal is creating offerings that make sense for the audience you're going after. All right. So with that, Leslie and Robin, looks like it's just going to be the three of us, which is wonderful. What you got? Anything I can help you with? Oh, all right. See, Robin's got something here in the chat area. I have to write a proposal for a marketing plan, a PR campaign, and now add an email campaign. It's for a company that's been in business for 15 plus years and now breaking into the U.S. market. I'm stuck on what to include for both the PR campaign and especially the email campaign. They currently have someone writing emails but not getting any results. The main reasons are because they're getting lists from associations, no personalization, and too long. All right. Good stuff. So, Robin,
hi.
How are you?
Good, and you?
Hello.
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you. I can hear you, too.
Good.
So, all right. So, this is, tell me a little bit about what kind of client are they? What type of organization?
They are a software company, and their target audience is startup companies.
Okay. And they want a marketing plan. Tell me a little bit about how you came across this. Have you done any work for them, or was it? Is this the first?
No, this will be the first time. I actually got an email from them, back in the end of September. There was a software business conference in Boston, and they sent out emails to everybody that was attending the show. And I got on the list somehow. I have no idea how I got on the list, but anyways, they sent the COO sent me an email and said that he wanted to meet me because he was going to be attending the show. So we met for coffee face to face at the show. I didn't attend the show because I was actually heading the next day to a different show, but we did meet because it was in Boston. We did meet face to face. And he told me that he was looking for writers to help him with email campaigns and marketing and some other things, and specifically to the U.S. market. So he had researched me, and so we got to talking back and forth. Nope. Okay, the screen's changed. And he... All right, so... He told me
They're from, where are they from?
They're in Belarus.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, and this guy is actually in the U.S. right now. So So he's been here.
Okay.
So we got.
Would you be working with him?
I would be working with him, but also he has me talking to his CMO, so the chief marketing officer. And she's in Belarus, and we've been talking. And her and I have had, we've had four Skype meetings. And he and I had the first business meeting face-to-face, and then we met over the phone. We had another meeting 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
She's all excited.
How are you feeling about it?
At first, I wasn't sure I wanted to do business with them. But then once I realized that they're only targeting the small businesses, the startups, then I was okay with it. And I wasn't okay with it originally because of how much they pay or how much they're charging companies to do software development.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with it now because I've figured out who their audience is, and I've actually seen the list of some of their customers, and I know these companies can't afford to pay high-paying clients or high-paying developers. So, like I said, I'm okay with that. So,
gotcha.
The CMO and I, we've talked quite a few times now. She wants to definitely work with me. The COO, when we had our conversation 2 weeks ago, he went on again about saying that he wasn't getting any results for the email campaigns. And when I first met him, when I first met him and we were talking, I asked him how much he was paying his guy for the for the emails. And he told me he was paying him $300 to write an email. And if they got results, he would get an extra $200.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him I thought that was kind of cheap.
Well, who's he doing this with, or who's writing this stuff for him?
He told me that it's a big-time copywriter out of Boston, which I don't believe. Because since then, last week I actually saw the emails.
Uh-huh.
And they're atrocious. The guy doesn't speak English.
These are cold emails?
Yes, they're cold emails, and they're like everything you tell us not to do.
Yeah. I know the type. There are a lot of companies that do this kind of work, and I've seen their emails because they target me too, you know, and I'm like, man,
yeah, I get them
so
too.
Bad.
Yeah. So I asked him, you know, what kind of responses he was looking for. Uh-huh. And, you know, he said he was looking for sales. So we had this whole long talk about how you can't expect sales right off the bat. And so when we talked 2 weeks ago, again, he brought up the whole email thing. And I asked him if he was getting any clicks on any of the links in there. And he said, well, a couple of them he was. And I said, so you are getting some kind of response.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went through this whole thing. And he's like, oh, I never even looked at it that way. So I've sort of opened his eyes to a different way of looking at email campaigns. And he asked me if I thought that phone calls should be included in there somewhere along the line, and I told him absolutely. And
yeah.
I told him even direct mail, and that there was this whole process and stuff. And so after we had our conversation, he told me that I've opened his eyes to a whole new world of email marketing, and he wanted me to put a proposal together to do the email campaigns. Now, according to his CMO, she believes that he wants me to take over the whole thing, which is not what he said.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. But they also want me to help. They also want me to do for 2019, they want me to do their PR campaign to get them their name known in the U.S., but also to introduce them to different organizations, like meetups, and get them maybe on the speaking circuit, or even just into some of these organizations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
what we're doing.
Here's you know, it sounds like they need, well, they need a lot of help, right? And, you know, that can include, right, we're talking PR. With PR, there's like all these different things. Then there is possibly messaging. With these kinds of companies, that's typically a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that includes several things. Then there's email marketing. And of course, that includes several things. And let's just add one more, you know, phone sales. And, you know, that's got its own components and all that, right? So the way, you know, a lot of writers, when they get these opportunities, you know, they put automatically, they follow instructions. Okay, you need help with that? You want me to give you a proposal? So they start looking at each of these and they put together a proposal. This takes a lot of time to put something together meaningful, and they stress out over it. And I say, look, forget about this. I would move in a different direction, and I would do a very simple engagement. Let me give you a couple of options. One would be this engagement, where it's just a really just kind of a strategy and planning. And this is where you basically meet with them at a deeper level, and you put, you know, you listen to what they've got going on. You look to see where they're wanting to go, and then you put something together. The output of this is basically, you know, a plan. So plan and recommendations.
Right. So that's what I've been doing, is listening to them and talking to them, and the marketing plan, because they want help with that as well. So mm-hmm. I had submitted a proposal about a month or so ago, because they were heading to a huge conference in Lisbon, and she wanted me to go with her as well. So I submitted a proposal for both the marketing, strategizing for their marketing plan in December, but then also to go to Lisbon, and how going to Lisbon was going to help with the strategy and putting all this stuff together. But the CEO decided he didn't want to pay for me to go to Lisbon, because it was really last minute, like 3 days before.
Sure, yeah.
So I understand that. So now we're putting a whole thing, new thing together, but it does include strategizing for the marketing, with the marketing plan to put that, and then based on the results of the marketing plan, we will do everything else, is what I told them originally.
Well, there's value to this. I mean, like, this is something that, you know, that I would charge. It depends on how you look at it. Some people look at it as a loss leader, and, you know, they'll charge, like, let's say $1,000. But of course, they know that they're going to, based on what they're recommending, a lot of that stuff the company's going to need help with. And of course, you become kind of the obvious choice to mm-hmm. help create that. So they use it really just as a front end product to help the client just really narrow down what they need to focus on. And here's the roadmap, essentially. And then, of course, well, if you need help executing that, then I can help you with that. But what this does too is it benefits you, because now it gives you a clear set of items and deliverables that you can quote. You see what I'm saying? Like, once you have agreement on it, then you have something very specific that you can quote. So that's one approach, okay? This is the approach I like to take when the scope is just not very well defined. They just need help with everything. Okay, well then you could charge them for this. The other thing you could do is to take one piece, like the email, and then quote, you know, let's just splinter it off from there. I know you need help with that other stuff, but why don't we start there? And then put something together just around the email marketing, and maybe specifically cold. You know, not all the other pieces, and, you know, just the cold email marketing. And this is, you know, drafting them, the original emails, this is the follow-ups. Even before that is, you know, strategy. Because, you know, as you know, it's not just a copy. It's, okay, who are we emailing? Where are we getting that information? You know, what do these people really need? How do we really get their attention? So it's not just, you're not going to write something without context. So there's more to it than just the words. Okay, I think this might, what I'm hearing is, this is really kind of the their biggest pain point right now. And this is really where you could maybe show them some results relatively quickly, and then that gets you in the door for the other stuff. Like, hit them with, give them what's like the big fire right now, the top of mind issue.
Right.
As opposed to trying to do all these things, you know?
But for the, see, and that's the issue, because for the COO, the emails is the big issue. For the marketing officer, the marketing plan and the PR in the U.S. is the big issue for her. And I've picked up on that there's clashing between the two. And she even mentioned, the CMO actually mentioned in our last conversation that the two of them were told by the CEO they're no longer allowed to go to the same conferences because the COO feels that she's in competition.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, so I don't get too wrapped up in the politics. The good news is you're dealing with a top officer here, the CEO. So the CEO is going to be the one, I would present this to him and then let him decide. And he's going to have a final word. If you were dealing with the lower level people, then this would be a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting pulled in different directions. So just go straight to the top and make it look, we can, and maybe what you do is you propose this to him. Look, you, we could go this route. Okay. Here's the output. And then you'll have a list of things, you know, that I can help you with and some other things, you know, you're going to have to work with somebody else, but at least you'll have direction. Or we could go ahead and tackle this other thing, you know, which is like a top of mind issue for you. And let's get you some results. And then we can look at some of these other things. And then let him decide. So I think this is more important than figuring out, okay, what should I quote for this and then this and then for this? Like that's not going to get you anywhere.
Right.
Because you know what's going to happen is not only have they not decided, but the number is going to be so big in order for it to be worth your while that, I mean, and all this stuff, it costs a lot of money that they're going to stall and then they're going to go back to the drawing board and then they're going to contact somebody else. Does that make sense?
It does. They told me that the PR quotes were like 10,000 or more a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit on the high side, usually with smaller companies.
Yeah, that's what the CEO said too.
Usually more like 5,000. You know, these firms that work with smaller companies, they have packages where they'll do. But the thing about the PR, that's a very specialized thing because, I mean, part of the value of the PR is having relationships with key people in the media so you can get articles and pieces placed. So I'm not saying you can't do that because I know you have some background in that, right? But
right,
it can be a tough sell. Like usually these companies are looking for more of a team. So I don't know. Based on that, what do you think? I mean, do you think that you should go, you know, maybe go to the CEO and offer A or B or give him both options and then let him decide?
I think I should still do maybe A and B. So B is already the marketing plan because they need help with that. And that's for the month of December. And then from there we can, because in the marketing plan and strategy, I had originally talked to them about doing key messaging, which then goes into how we're going to approach the email strategy.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, look, be really that this is the right way of doing it. This is a more attractive way to get in the door, you know, because it's less risk on their part, big upside in terms of results. And then suddenly you got the credibility and then, you know, it really positions you well for this. But you've already been talking to them and offering value here.
Yeah, so they're very happy with everything I've told them so far in all these conversations, but now I want to get paid for this stuff.
Of course.
I don't want to do
it. Yeah, by the way,
strategy.
Just maybe like a heads up for the future. Now that you see this, can you see why you don't want to go too far with a prospect?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is something that's worth, that has value.
Right.
And so you kind of want to limit your conversations so that you can pitch this, the strategy and planning, and then that doesn't become like, well, yeah, but we've kind of had, you know, all these conversations already and you've given us all this advice.
Right.
You want to offer just enough value to show the credibility and build trust, but that's it.
Yes, I don't think I've given away too much because the last couple of conversations with the CMO was strictly about the trip in Lisbon.
Okay.
So really, I was careful not to help with the marketing plan. And also with the emails, I just said that there's ways to do this. And yes, I agreed that, you know, we should throw phone conversations in there. And also that there's a whole process to how many days in between. And, you know, I was like thinking your book on WOM email prospecting at the time, but
yeah.
I just said there's a whole process and I didn't tell them what the process was or anything else. I just said there's a whole process that went with it.
You know, I think if I were to do this, cause I've thought about it this myself, like I would love in a way to work with businesses with email marketing strategies that work immediately. Cause that's top line stuff, right? That generates leads and revenue very early and very quickly. And there's not a big cost to it, especially if they already have a mailing list, an email list. So I've thought about how I would do it. And it would be like if you have, and it's in the bonus resources, but I think you have it, the email prospecting playbook.
Yep, it's my little
that's
Bible.
Exactly.
It's right here.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would follow. It's like, hey, if you already have some clients and dormant clients and prospects who were interesting, it was just a timing issue, let's start there.
Mm-hmm.
Then let's go to cold and then let's nurture.
Right, and that was the whole thing that I was thinking of. And they're just now getting involved using a CRM and the CMO is trying to get all the sales guys to input all the information after all these years into Salesforce database as well.
Ah, okay.
So they have all that, just nobody has any of that information. And because the majority of it is over in Europe and they don't have a lot here in the US, that's why they were going with the cold. And email used to work for them in the beginning when emails first came out. But I keep telling them it's changed and you can't do it that way anymore.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And by the way, the 9-word email works really well with cold prospects too.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to really kind of think through, you know, how to best use it depending on how they want to start. Think of it as starting a conversation.
Right.
Not as like pitching a service or a product.
Yeah, because that's what their emails are doing right off the bat. They're just going right into the company and what the company is all about. And there's not one thing in a full page email that mentions anything about the customer.
So here's the good news, Robin. in a way, you know, even if you did this blindfolded, you'll be able to give them better results.
Right.
So you have a great advantage, great opportunity there. Cool. Well, listen, keep me posted. Let me know how it goes.
All right. It's due tomorrow. So.
All right.
Thanks, Ed.
All right. You're welcome. Cool. So Leslie here to help you as well. If you got anything, just, you can either raise your hand or just type in something in the, in the chat, or you can just let me know. Hey, how you doing, Leslie?
All right. You can hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Great. I have a little bit of a cold, but I can talk a little bit here.
Okay.
Let's see. I just wanted to give you a update. I had my two contacts and my two, some of my bigger clients left, but I was able to survive that, and I got new work from, you know, this engineering firm, then also the manufacturer where I write the blog. But there's a little wrinkle there, is he's hired a new inbound marketing agency, and I think he still wants to keep me writing like one blog every 5 weeks or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So in a way, I suppose they're competitors. He says there's one competitor right there that writes blogs. Is there anything special to say with the, you know, you've got this new inbound agency that's going to be helping out Safety Cover, you know, and I think, I don't know, just any recommendations on what to say, you know, like, hey, I'm doing these blogs and I'm still, you know, do you have new products that I can write case studies for, or, you know, are there any trends that you'd like to address in a white paper, or just any advice? Because he's going
to
have.
What did you used to do for them before this agency came in?
I've been writing blogs, like
Okay. Once
a month, or, you know, it's varied, maybe twice a month to once a month.
But it was just blogs.
Yep.
Okay, and then they've come in, and so that hasn't changed. Maybe the frequency is going to go down.
That's possible. Yeah, I mean, it just started. He was kind of hoping that my original contact would come. Mm-hmm. She's at her new job, and it's not going to happen. So.
Okay, and what are they coming in for? You said for inbound lead generation.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, like, he doesn't want to be bothered with posting blogs or anything like that. He wants somebody else to be doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, so what I'm interested in writing more content from them. So I don't know if I should say, hey, should I be in can I sometimes meet with the inbound agency or be part of a conference call, or, you know, it's just like, how can I get in there more?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If that's what you're doing before, and they brought in somebody for this, part of what they're going to need is a good stable of content. So I would be looking at what they're doing and looking to see, you know, where are their holes? You know, do they not have case studies, or do they not have enough?
Okay.
White papers, other, you know, interesting content. Because, you know, inbound, big part of inbound is the content. So now that might be part of what this agency is going to do, is to create that content. But I would be offering ideas.
Okay.
Hey, have you considered, you know, this? Have you considered adding some success stories? You know, and of course, if you have some insight that or some ideas you can offer, not just the have you considered this, but then add a little bit of context to it. So for, you know, you did this, you know, XYZ company had this success recently with, you know, whatever. Have you thought about writing up a success story on that, on how that came about.
Okay.
Have you thought about, now don't throw too much at them. Pick one thing.
Okay.
Or maybe two things at the most. So one of the, I've used this example before because this is like, it was classic. I had done all these pieces and a lot of them were white papers for this client of mine. And I talked about, oh, I know what it was, is he had talked to me about maybe hiring me to ghostwrite a book for him because I had done several white papers for him. And he was like the division president. And he's a great guy, lots of, you know, big idea guy. But you know what it is with these executives, it's like they're just too busy. They love this idea of writing a book, but they're too busy even to work with a ghostwriter to even think about it. Mm-hmm. So what I told them is, okay, what if we did an ebook? So about the third of the length, you know, we have a lot of content we could repurpose from these white papers I've worked with you on. I could interview for the balance of the content, and that would be, I'd make that really easy, and we could have something done in about 6 weeks. And I got a response back within the hour saying, done, let's do it. And then he CC'd somebody from his office and said, get with Brenda. I'm CCing it here. You guys coordinate, you know, the interview, and then just get, you know, Brenda can get back to me on whatever we need to do.
Okay.
You know, so it's just from offering a creative idea. Hey, I know you want to do this, but here's your challenge. What if we did a different version of that, and here's how we can make that really easy? But yeah. Of course, that only happens because I knew the client, right? I knew what they kind of wanted to do. I understood their challenges. It was keeping them from doing that. I also kind of look around to see what they were missing.
Okay. Well, I can look at they have done a few white papers, and I can, you know, like see how old they are and say, hey, I know there's these new things coming up. You know, can we address that in an updated white paper or something like that?
Yeah, have you thought about updating this thing, and here's why, you know?
Yeah.
Don't make them feel, by the way, like, hey, you don't know what you're doing. You know, this thing's old and it's out there. But, you know, you never want to make them feel bad.
Yeah.
But offer ideas like that. I think clients appreciate it. You know, they may not take you up on it, but they appreciate that you're thinking about them. As long as they don't call their baby ugly and, you know, make them feel like they're incompetent, they'll appreciate it. And then offer things that they haven't thought of. So again, repurposing content is a great one. Splintering content is another great one. So white papers, let's say somebody's got a lot of white papers, you know, we could tear those apart into like mini blog posts or social media updates.
Okay.
Or short videos, or, you know, there's like so much you could do with existing content to reuse and repurpose.
Yeah.
The solution to, Leslie, might just be, instead of offering just one idea, so here's another thought.
Yeah.
Email him to let him know, you know, I got a list of ideas here.
Okay.
That without a big investment, you could get a ton of value out of existing content you already have. I'd love to set up a 20-minute call with you just to run through some of these.
Okay.
You know, and then what you do, so you sell the call and the email, and then in the call you sell some of these ideas, as opposed to taking your chances with one idea on over email and then having him say, well, not really.
Yeah.
And then now you sound desperate if you try something else. Okay, well, what about this other thing?
That's good, going through a few of them. Like I have, you know, I have blogs, a couple of blogs for the future, so that's good. But it's just I want to get beyond that, you know, like the case study or doing a white paper or something like that. And so.
Yeah, let me give you – well, here's something else to consider, Leslie, really the biggest and best solution to this dilemma.
Yeah.
Is to find another client too. Not, I'm not saying replace these guys,
but find somebody, you know, additional. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, here's, let me just kind of build on that. As I just interviewed a guy who's a leader of a manufacturer of backflow preventers. That's what, you know, I often write about that for the safety cover. They manufacture the enclosures that go over backflows.
But I could go to back keep to them this warm.
Excuse me, backflow preventers are to, you know, protect the public water supply when they hook up.
Oh, I know. I used to sell those.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. I used to be in the waterworks industry. Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, you know all about that then.
Yeah, yeah. We in Florida, it's so funny because, you know, they go above ground.
Yeah.
In South Florida, and then I moved to Atlanta, and we opened a branch here, and it's all underground in a vault.
Ooh, yeah, those are always so good. I talked to Rick Fields of Zurn. So have you ever heard of Zurn?
Yeah, that's exactly. There were only like two of them back then. It was Zurn and somebody else.
Well, and Watts. Could be Watts. You know, I mean, there is Zurn and
Watts.
Yeah,
Watts. That's right. That's right.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
So anyway, I interviewed Rick Fields, who's, you know, like a vice president at Zurn. And, you know, and he liked the blog that I did. And I was thinking mm-hmm. of going back and saying, hey, you know, I've got some background in this. Do you ever need, you know, extra help? I know they have a marketing department.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that they don't get overloaded, you know.
Yeah. So just like he's approved it, but maybe once it gets published, I can send him the link and say, hey, Rick, it was great talking with you. You know, I'm available if you need, you know, if your marketing department gets overloaded, you know, should I talk to you or talk to somebody else? I mean, kind of what are my talking points?
For an email like that?
Yeah.
I think it's the, that's a great excuse when you have the finished piece and to reach out and say, if you ever, I wouldn't say I'm available. You know, you don't want to make it sound like I have no work.
I'm desperate.
Just say, you know, if you ever find an opportunity or if your marketing team is ever overloaded and needs help with, you know, some writing projects, you know, already have the background. So zero hand holding, and I'd love the opportunity to discuss how I could help.
Okay.
You know, would you be the best person to reach out to, or do you have someone in your marketing department that I should contact? Always end with a question. You're going to get better response.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good.
And then you're probably going to get a response, but if you get the, you know, I'm going to follow your info to somebody in my marketing team. So now you have like no name.
Yeah.
Then the next question is like, oh my gosh, you know, what do I do? Do I ask him for the name so I can follow up with him or her? What I would say is reply and just say, wonderful, thank you so much. Would you mind also giving me the information just so I could follow up with them in a couple of months? And there's a decent chance that they will, but if not, it's going to be a no response. And in that case, I just go to LinkedIn and look to see who is in the marketing department. I don't follow up right away because I don't want to make it look like, you know, I don't trust them and I'm going to go to his people right away.
Yeah.
But I wait a few weeks and just reach out and say, hey, you know, let's say it's Jim, a marketing director that I found. Just wanted to reach out. I recently wrote this piece and I was in touch with, you know, Joe Schmo, your CEO. And anyway, just wanted to introduce myself. If maybe take a warm email approach to it. You know, kind of use that format.
Okay.
Your meaningful connection is the fact that you wrote this piece. So you start with that.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're in contact with the CEO. Then you go into your value statement, then a link to your site, and then a question, call to action.
Okay.
So treat it like a warm email. It's just that your meaningful connection is a little different.
Okay. All right. I'll just ask you one other area. Is I'm on this ACEC PR committee, and they're going to be talking about redoing web pages. And so at one point, do I just volunteer to do a few, or, you know, I don't know how you handle that.
Are you on the board or committee?
I'm on the PR committee.
Okay.
And I know we meet next week, and they're going to be talking about, you know, they're looking at their website and what pages are most popular, and they're talking about rewriting pages. So,
how long have you been a member of the committee?
July. Just, I'm pretty new.
Okay. And what do your peers in the committee look like?
Oh, I'm the only writer. They're all, like marketing people of engineering companies, some owners.
Okay. Oh, good. I would volunteer to do a certain amount so that you'd be willing to help out and write some of them, and then, but then put some parameters around it, you know, some limits. Don't open it up to whatever you need, I'll get done. Because okay. Then they'll just bring you the whole pile of them in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
And here you go. You know, they'll dump them on your desk. The biggest benefit that I think you'll find from volunteering from that role is showcasing your work, number one. Number two, showing your willingness to help and to contribute with your talent. And number three, the byproduct of that is now you're engaging with them because now you're working on something tangible. So the natural byproduct of that is you get to develop a relationship with some of them. And they get to see your work ethic and how you work and what it's like working with you. And like, so you develop trust, credibility, a relationship.
Okay.
You know, when I did that, I was surprised. I did it just to kind of, because I was shy. And to me, that was an easy way to, just like have a reason to be there. And the interesting thing, and I thought that my clients were going to come from, you know, people at the meetings and the meet and greets, the monthly breakfast meetings and so forth. And the real opportunities came from my peers in the committee. As I volunteered, they got to interact with me and they got to see how I worked. And, you know, we mm-hmm. had to work together. And, you know, suddenly they're asking me, hey, listen, I know somebody that I need to introduce you to. I think we had, like, all kinds of opportunities came up, but from the source that I wasn't expecting.
Okay. Well, I know like they have, the companies are supposed to write blogs for their award posts, and even the one, the head of this, you know, the ACC Wisconsin said, well, maybe you could write their blogs if they need help. You know, it didn't go anywhere, but he did say that. And then the engineering company that I work with, my direct contact is on the committee. And, you know, she said one time, oh, yes, Leslie works for us. Yeah, so that was good. That was good PR for me. But I haven't really, you know, nothing's, you know, it hasn't resulted in any additional work, but maybe I'm just an impatient person, you know.
Well, I mean, it just sounds like you're just starting to develop those relationships.
Yeah, it just takes a while,
but,
I guess.
You know, don't be afraid to be assertive. Sometimes you'll have to just ask. Like for me, it just happened naturally. But had it not happened, I would have just asked, hey, Sam, curious, you know, do you guys need help, you know, with some of this stuff?
Yeah.
I got right now, the way I like to position that, I never want to give the impression that I'm like desperate for clients. Right. Here's some wording that I've used before that's really effective. Something to the effect of, you know, I'm right now in the process of looking for one good client. So in other words, I have room right now for one good client. But the way I say it is, I want them to understand or get this feeling that it's not just any client. I'm looking for the right client.
Yeah.
Right? Right now, I'm kind of on the lookout for the right client, for one new client. I have an opening. I have capacity.
Okay.
I'm just curious, you know, do you guys need help with X, Y, or Z? Sometimes I'll give examples instead of just saying with writing projects, because that's kind of broad.
Yeah.
Or do you happen to know someone who might be looking? And you've earned that. You know what I'm saying? So part of the reason I don't mind volunteering my services is, even though I wasn't doing it for them, I was doing it for the organization. But because they're part of the committee, in a way, I've kind of built relationship capital. I've built, I've shown that I'm willing to give of myself and my talents, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid. I have a colleague who did a lot of what I just described, but she never asked. And you know what ended up happening? She volunteered all this time. And I mean, like, we're talking, you know, dozens of hours. And she ended up getting nothing from it. And she never asked.
Okay.
You know, and I think it's, that's a shame. You know, if you're not getting, if it's not coming naturally, if people aren't asking you, that's fine. Then just ask.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Okay. Well, that's, those are my two areas, taking your time. So I'm running out of voice. So that's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Great.
Well, good
thank
luck.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Ed. It's always good talking with you.
Likewise, Leslie. Take care. Okay, Robin, how many email campaigns would you recommend that I quote for? Hey, Robin.
Hi, Ed.
I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of going blind here. I'm not sure if it's necessarily number of email campaigns as much as I would need to know. Because remember, we talked a little bit about how, like, we need to, with cold emails, where's my pen? There's drafting the email, sure, but then there's follow-up emails and there's a strategy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. I mean, I would need to know more to figure out what would make sense. You know, and then the other thing is, okay, would it make sense to try kind of like a test group? You know, and then have this particular sequence, you know, kind of like what we do with warm email prospecting, you know, just, so email one, email two, with this as a follow-up, and, you know, is there an email three? Does it
make sense?
Yeah, that's
what they have right now. They have three.
Okay.
And then, and all three look the same. They're just in a different order. The wording in the paragraphs.
Gotcha. And then does it make sense to, you know, do we go back to this a few weeks later, or do you just drop it? So it really depends. Where are they getting these emails, by the way?
They're getting them from associations. So like innovation associations and technical groups. Mm-hmm. So some of them are coming from, let's say, MIT innovation groups and some other ones. So there's a lot of research that goes into this as well as to, you know, finding the right email. Well, they have the emails, but there's no other real information with these emails.
You just got emails. You don't have names, or you don't even know who these people are.
Well, I think there's names and emails. So it's anybody who's, I think it's anybody who's gone through these associations for some of their events.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's where they have it. So it would, those would be the cold emails. And then the warmer ones would be from, you know, the ones that the salespeople have.
The thing about warm email is that, you know, they're going to have to be personalized, right? Like 10% of it needs to be personalized.
Right.
So that is a different animal. You know, that you can't really automate that as well. Well, you can, there are ways you can automate the follow-ups, you know, so if you do this as a warm email, like these two, you can automate, but you know, this one needs to be more personalized.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, you know, based on the volume, is that even practical? You know, do they want to do that?
They know they need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to do it, but they haven't succeeded yet.
Well, so here's, you know, if you do warm email prospecting, that's one approach, and you know that this is going to be, this is going to be time intensive over here. You could do the 9-word email campaign. So just to give you an idea, here's what I do. It's also 3 emails, the one that's been working well for me. Email one is, you know, let's just say in their case, you know, we're working with company X to do Y. Would you like us to help you with that? Something along those lines. And of course, the words here really matter. Okay, mm-hmm. So this is not actual copy, but I'm saying this is kind of the gist of it.
Right.
Email two is the same, usually the same, or maybe if there's something in there that I want to change, I may change it. The subject line is going to be different. So different subject line. And sometimes a different, like a different product or offering. So to do Y. So instead of Y, to do Z.
Mm-hmm.
So different service, let's just say. And then email three is, I just go ahead and just tell them what we're doing. You know, it's kind of like the whole, think of it as a short sales letter. In an email, which I know goes against, you know, the cold emailing, warm email prospecting approach. But in your case, you know, it could be back to the same thing as one. The whole idea, though, is some people only respond if there's something concrete in the message. But these other two tend to create some high degree of curiosity. For them to work, though, it can't be like you can't make it sound. And this is a hard thing to do. Like you're trying to convince them,
right,
to buy something. You really the way Dean Jackson talks about this, who came up with this idea, is you're trying to compel them. There's difference. Big difference between compelling someone to move on something, meaning to like respond, as opposed to convince someone to sign up or to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So these first two emails really need to be about compelling them to respond. You know, so notice, yeah, there's kind of an implied, you know, we have a paid service, but this question needs to really feel like, you know, it's kind of like we're going to, you know, help you out. We're going to show you. And all they're intended to do is really to start a conversation. That's the bottom line.
Right. Like when I send the emails to the boat show people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what do we want? We want someone to say, well, I don't know. It depends. What do you guys do with it? Or what do you offer? What do you have?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? And that's when you can then respond. A couple different ways you could do it. Is you could give them some limited information to just kind of give them an idea and then invite them to a brief call where they could run through some options, you know, and you can make it clear this is not a sales call, which, you know, want to show you, you know, maybe some of the ways we're doing this, that kind of thing. So now that's when you start taking them to a sales conversation. Even not a sales call, and you're not there to persuade, you're just there to qualify. It's really a qualification call. So, yeah, if they respond, then, you know, that's a short call to qualify. And then from there, of course, you know, if they qualify, then it could be, you know, a sales call.
All right.
Does that make sense?
I think, yes. And I think that's exactly what he's looking for, or very close to what he's looking for.
By the way, so one thing I missed here is, you don't want to go straight to, oh, yeah, yeah, well, let's set up a call. You want to give reply with info, with some info. Or with what I do is, take that back because it's really not follow-up questions. So when I do this with coaching, you know, I'm about to start this group, or I'm about to help some people get to this result. would you like to join us? It's like, well, depends. What have you got? Instead of just vomiting a bunch of information, which, by the way, I used to do, now I just reply with, great. Well, listen, tell me more. Tell me a little bit more about what kind of clients you work with. Oh, well, you know, work with these types of clients. Oh, great. So what income level are you at and where are you trying to get to? Oh, well, right now I'm here, but I'm trying. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. That feels doable based on where you are right now. And then I might ask them a third question. Because I'm honestly, what I'm doing is I'm doing both of these.
Right, so you're pre-qualifying them for the short call.
I am, but at the same time, I'm starting a conversation.
Right.
Now, so far, I'm doing all this over email, and instead of the sales call, when it makes sense, if it makes sense, then I send them all the information. The email does the selling. However, in their case, that's not going to work. They're going to need to eventually take people here. So this is an email convo, you know, with a couple of questions. It won't take that many to get them to a short call just to qualify. And then if they do qualify, then at the end of that session, you schedule, you don't call it a sales call. You call it something else that's going to feel like it's got value.
Right.
And this is where the convincing happens. I mean, part of it happens here, but really that's when you convince. The compelling is here. Compel to respond. So long answer to a straight question, straightforward question, but it depends. I mean, if it were me and if I had to do this for a company, this is what I would propose. And I would do it with a test of, you know, maybe 500 or 1,000 emails. And I would build the sequence of maybe 3 emails. And then I would offer that. I would keep it really simple. Hey, let's try this as a pilot rather than, you know, put together a very complex proposal. Does that help?
Yeah, so then it's the age-old question of what do you charge for something like this?
Yeah, it depends. What kind of budget do they have to work with, you know? Do you have any idea?
The budget's not an issue, so they have money, mm-hmm. and they're willing to spend the money if they can get the results.
Yeah. I might do, I might propose a test run of, look, we're in this together. I want to work with you long term. Let's do, I'm going to write a 3 email campaign sequence. I'm going to give you the strategy and I'll charge a fixed amount. And if that works, then, you know, we can expand the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying, as opposed, because again, you can't, like, there's not a lot of words here. Okay. So you don't want to get into this. Yeah. But those are so short. You're charging me how much?
Right. But it's still the strategy and, you know, writing the right words and all that other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this is all over the place. People, one way you could do it is, you kind of work backwards. So if you know average sale, then you kind of work towards, you know, well, how many, you know, the conversion rate, qualified prospects, you know, how many in converting to a sale, and then leads, you know, if you had some sense of this, then you can kind of work backward. Okay, so then you'll know out of 500 emails, you know, if we get just one sale, what would be the average sale? You know, do you have any idea?
No. Let's see.
I mean, otherwise, we're just guessing. Like, I could say, you know, charge them $3,000. But, I mean, I've just pulled that out of nowhere. I would try to figure this out. I would ask them, don't guess. Your average sale, can you give me some indication, even if it's a range? And then I would put it this way. Yeah, it's like, look, let's start with a group of 500. Oh, and I would want to know also how long it takes typically to take someone from a lead to that first engagement, the first project. Because you'll be able to help them generate leads, but if it takes typically 3-4 months, then you're not going to see that final result for them.
Right.
But if a typical sale is 10K, then I think you can make a great case for, look, let's start with 500 emails. I'm going to create something that at a minimum is going to help you generate one sale. And then I would feel comfortable quoting something around $3,000. Because, hey, one sale and you've tripled your investment. How does that feel to you?
No, it feels a little low.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, this is just an example. So mm-hmm. We don't know. If their average sale is 10,000, they might be willing to go with 5, again, you got to make sure they understand this is not just the email copy, this strategy. I'm going to help you, implement this, and then work through, all these pieces. I'll help you design that. But until you know this number down here, it's really hard to figure this out. Because if their average sale is $3,000, then it's just, not that you can't propose $5,000. It's just going to be harder. And here's what you want to do. You want to set up a situation where, honestly, like, this is a no-brainer, and that we're talking at least a couple of sales, 2, 3, 4, 5 sales.
Right.
But let's just break it down to something that, got worst case scenario, one sale. So I know you want a straight answer, Robin, but I'm throwing it back to you. And I think this is going to be more helpful if you understand kind of how to think about it and what info you need to be able to quote something meaningful that you can quote with confidence. Okay.
Okay, so I need to know the range for the average sale that they have and how long it takes for a lead
to turn into a sale, yeah.
And then
if you can get any information, when have they gotten any results from their email campaigns or no?
No results at all. They've gotten a couple of clicks, but absolutely no results. And they've sent out like 5 or 6 of them now.
Okay.
And I know he's been paying them, the guy, $300 a piece.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is going to be a big jump for him.
Right.
But
right.
That's
and
why
knows,
you need to
he knows that.
But even then, this is why you have to position it the right way. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's going to feel like funny money, that you're asking for.
Right.
So, yeah. I would put it that way, and then just know, as long as you know you can quote it confidently, then you put it out there, and then you forget about the rest. I mean, if they don't go for it, maybe you have an opportunity to have a conversation about it, but if even then they just, they want to pay peanuts, then that's okay. Then you walk away. There's real value here, But I'm curious, so let me know how it goes. I think this could be a great opportunity. I mean, it depends. These clients can be tough. These smaller, unsophisticated clients that want you to like solve their problems can be very difficult. And they seem like, oh, wow, there's so much I could do for them. But typically they're the biggest pain in the butt clients. But if you find the right one, they can be wonderful because you're suddenly their hero.
Right.
So could go either way. but I think it sounds like it's worth pursuing. You've gone deep enough to know that it's worth going this far with them. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. I know Leslie's already left, so I got to run to another meeting, so we're going to sign off. If you're listening to the replay, hopefully this is helpful. We get into some really cool detail on some things that if you haven't encountered yet, you will at some point. So hopefully you found some good value and some good ideas here. Guys, that's it for today. Next month or next Platinum Call, I don't have the date in front of me, but I'm going to bring a guest coach with me, Susan Baracco. So Susan has been helping me coach some of my writer groups. She's fantastic. She is a very successful writer and ghostwriter. She works with women executives and women leaders. And I've asked her to help me coach in the Platinum Call. So she and I are going to be on the call next month. And then you're going to start seeing more and more of her over the next few months. But I'll have her on next month. I'll introduce her then. Just wanted to give you a heads up. Of course, we can continue the conversation in the forum. And until then, you have a great rest of the month. Happy holidays. And we'll talk again next year. Take care.